With that, we have Dr. Michael Lax, who is going to intersect nicely with what Dr. Tish Davis just presented. Dr. Lax is with Family Medicine and also with the Occupational Health Clinical Centers at the State University of New York Upstate Medical University in Syracuse. And he's going to talk to us about struggling for care, impact of workers' compensation reform on injured workers' access to medical care in New York State.
Right here. Yeah. Great, thanks. No disclosures to talk about. I'm going to do three things. Basically, do a brief introduction. Now it's going to be really brief. Talk about two studies that we did, and then talk about the, if we have time, the possible implications for future directions. And basically, the impetus for doing this work came from our experience since their workers' compensation, last big workers' compensation reform in New York State in 2007. And just a 30-second, this was simplified to begin with. Now it will be even simpler. Basically, business interests have been trying to cut workers' compensation costs in New York State for as long as I've been there, which is 25 years. And in 2007 was just the latest round of this. And in terms of what they, what actually was accomplished in about the reform, the main thing that business interests were, I think, were interested in is the top thing there, which is a cap on permanent partial disabilities. So they're, even though they're still, I think, called permanent partial disabilities, they are no longer really permanent. But the things that we were interested in, or I was interested in, was had to do more with how the workers' compensation reform of 2007 impacted workers' ability to access medical care. So we looked at basically two aspects of that. One I would consider to be kind of an intended consequence of the law or the reform. The second was an unintended consequence of the law. And if you go down to in the middle there, it says medical treatment guidelines. That's specifically what we're looking at, because for the first time, New York State instituted medical treatment, and it's actually diagnostic and treatment guidelines for four of the most common conditions that make up about 60% of comp claims. Cervical spine, low back, low spine, shoulder, and knee. So all of those came under or had medical treatment guidelines that were developed for them. And the intended impact of those medical treatment guidelines were to ideally to speed access to testing and treatment for injured workers. The other aspect that I've just draw attention to is that it also, for things that did not fall under the medical treatment guidelines, it used to be under, before the reform, that if you wanted to do a diagnostic test or provide some treatment, if it was over $500, you had to get authorization from the insurance carrier. They raised that to $1,000, and so we were looking a little bit at the potential impact of that as well on access to care. We did the study at our clinic, which is an occupational health clinical center, part of the New York State network of occupational health clinics. We've been around for the last 25 years, and institutionally we're based in the Department of Family Medicine at SUNY Upstate Medical University. And what we did was it was basically a chart review. And when I thought about doing this, I thought this would be really simple. We're just going to count the days basically from the time somebody came to the clinic and got a recommendation for a particular diagnostic test or for some treatment that was under the guidelines. How long did it take for them to actually get to where they needed to go for the test or for the treatment? And we compared two time periods. We compared patients before the reform took place in 2000. The reform was 2007, but we actually looked at patients in 2008 because the actual implementation of these changes were not until 2010. So the before was in 2008 and 2009, and the after was 2010. And we had some patients who had private insurance, so we compared the workers' comp patients with private insurance to see how long both of those took. And when I thought this would be a nice simple process, this actually was the flow sheet that that we developed in terms of all the nuances and the possible pathways. But the bottom line was this, that before the reforms, these are for all cases, compared to each other. Before the comp reforms, it took an average of 72 days for a person to get a test or get treatment. After the reforms, 34 days, so cut in more than half, and almost comparable to private insurance at 27. So that's overall. But when you look at it here, this is the difference between cases that were actually accepted under workers' compensation versus cases that had not yet been accepted. And you can see there's a big difference in the before the comp reform, cases that were accepted, averaging 58 days to get testing or treatment, afterwards down to 30, so cut almost in half. Before, if the case was not accepted, 103 days to get there, but afterwards cut down quite a bit as well. But I think part of the issue with that number, there's some limitations to the study, one of which is that I think after the medical treatment guidelines, there were a number of patients actually that the patient decided that because their case was not accepted and it was taking so long that they just sort of opted to go with, like Tish was saying, go with health insurance or some other mechanism of payment or not get the test done. So they're not necessarily counted in that after group. And this is another little comparison between the before and after the reforms of cases. On the left, those are cases or individuals who have conditions that fall under the treatment guidelines. The two graphs on the right are conditions that are not covered by the medical treatment guidelines, just to sort of see the comparison there. And even in the cases that were not covered by the medical treatment guidelines, they had a not a significant, but a fairly big reduction in time, which may relate to that $1,000 limit that I was talking about, up to the $1,000 limit. So, in terms of the results at face value, it looks like that there was some positive impact from these reforms in 2007 on access to treatment and to diagnostic testing for both individuals who have conditions under the guidelines and to some extent for people who are not. However, I think there are a number of limitations to the study, and I think since that time, this was from patients really early on in that process, we've now have developed some more experience, and we haven't restudied it again. I think we probably should, because I think the results may be different now. Just some of the problems that people have been having that sort of don't relate necessarily to access, but some of the issues that are sort of coupled with that, is that treatments are often ended early under the medical treatment guidelines because the guidelines are predicated upon a patient's improvement. And so you have to keep proving improvement in order for them to keep receiving the treatment. And there are some fixed ends, like for physical therapy, you can get only 12 treatments or, things that are kind of arbitrary that are difficult to get around. Okay, so that was sort of one aspect that we looked at. And then the second aspect was what I would call an unintended consequence and relates more directly to some of the things that Tish and other speakers mentioned. And that is that in New York State, we've had a problem, at least upstate, a widespread problem with doctors participating in comp for a long time. And we did a study earlier in 2001 which looked at access to doctors who were actually taking workers' compensation in the region of central and northern and southern tier New York that we cover. And we found that in almost all specialties, except for maybe orthopedic surgery and a couple of others, a lot of docs were not taking workers' comp. And we have the impression that since these comp reforms in 2007, there are waves of, as they implement different aspects of it since then, there are waves of doctors that keep exiting the system since then. This crisis of finding a doctor in upstate New York has become much more acute over the last 6 years since this reform. Well, we just wanted to quantify that a little bit. So we basically, again, fairly simple study design. We had physicians in, I think, about 13 different or 14 specialties in our region, 8 counties in our central New York region. We got the names from the workers' compensation database. The workers' comp board has providers. You can look for a provider in a given area or a given specialty from the Workers' Comp Board's website. And so we just basically took the lists off the website for our region, for 8 different counties, and called them all the practices. And basically some of the, and it should be, you should recognize that the workers who participate in workers' compensation and who are listed by the compensation board, the estimates are I think are guesstimates that about 33% of physicians in New York State as a whole participate in workers' comp. Now, that obviously varies by specialty, varies by geography, but the point is, this is the doctors who are in this database are only a proportion and only a minority of the overall numbers of dockets in New York State. That other 67% doesn't participate at all. They don't even get into the system. So here's what we found. What we found is that 25% of those listed were not even reachable because for the reasons that you see up there. And here's the actually, this is a better just results of the study. You can see, go down the list, and the specialties that are accepting workers' compensation are basically orthopedics, neurosurgery, physical medicine is doing fairly well, and those are the highest. And you can see the results for a lot of the other specialties. Allergy, 20% of them are accepting workers' compensation. Dermatology, quite low. ENT, quite low. Primary care practitioners, quite low, between quarter and just over a third in those specialties. And psychiatry and psychology, also quite low. Pulmonary, about 50%. And compare those to 2001. And remember, these numbers are not exactly comparable because the 2001 numbers, the study design was a little bit different. In 2001, we actually looked in the phone book and we called up all of the physicians that we could find in the phone book. So that included all the physicians in our region and not just the physicians who were in workers' comp. So that denominator was a whole lot bigger. And so what you can see is, even with that the numbers, the shift that you're seeing, there's a reduction in many of the specialties, like dermatology, 50 to 20%, allergy down just a little bit, et cetera. But those differences actually could be quite a bit greater because of that difference in the study design. So, again, we sort of proved what we already knew, which is that this issue of patients finding doctors, who are injured workers finding doctors, is something that I think is really acute in our area, and in some areas, again, geographically speaking, much more of an issue. 1 minute. Okay. And here's why some of the reasons that were given why don't MDs accept workers' comp, and I would just mention that these comments are given by the person who answers the phone, so it's not given by the practice administrator or doctor. But it's whatever the person answering the phone, whatever their position was and what they knew. So you can see some of the reasons that were given up there. And I guess just to finish up, I mean, the concern that I have from this relates to something that I think Nancy Lesson said in her question, and that is that New York is a free choice state, that people have, injured workers have the ability to choose the doctor that they go to. And I think that this sort of problem actually threatens that quite a bit, because if you look at the Business Council's website, for example, in New York State, what you'll see is their workers' compensation legislative agenda. And on that agenda, there are several items that have to do with gaining more control over where patients go to get their care for if they're injured on the job. And so if less and less doctors are participating, the solutions are, on the one hand, to try and do what Tish is talking about in Massachusetts, which is to keep struggling to expand the pool of doctors who are accepting and taking workers' compensation, or the other potential route is that employers are going to say, you know, workers can't find doctors, then we'll contract with them directly, and then they'll be able to find the doctors. So I think that this sort of problem calls for a political solution, and I think it's not too far down the road that we're going to have to really sort of figure out how we're going to do that and get there. Thanks. Okay.
I just wanted to raise the issue about the guidelines. One thing people might not realize is that some of the people in this seat within, who used to be a member of this section, was helped to develop them. So they were, it wasn't the, you know, the guidelines from the American Medical Association. But the point, the question I want to raise is that your study is about the clinic, which knows how to treat, you know, injured workers. You know, when we did the case studies, you know, people with back injury could go to 6 or 7 different types of specialties, and they don't necessarily understand the guidelines or agree with them. And I'm just wondering, have you thought about surveying, you know, the, you know, world of providers? Because I think that the results might be the opposite. Instead of reducing the time, you know, to get approvals and treatments, if these providers don't know the guidelines or are opposed to them, I think it's going to cause greater delays. At least that's anecdotally what the case studies in our little case study thing show.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and that, yeah, that could be a direction that we would go in. But I think the other hand, you know, what I described was sort of one side of a double-sided sword, even for us at our clinic. The other edge of that sword clearly is going in that direction you're talking about, because the medical treatment guidelines, a lot of people who were receiving care for chronic sorts of conditions under the medical treatment guidelines got knocked out of the care. They've been receiving for 5, 10. I had one person who was getting care for a back problem for 20 years. They had been receiving care. You know, it was just basic kind of stuff for flare-ups here and there. Because the guidelines are predicated upon improvement, and she wasn't improving, she was just being maintained, they knocked her off, and they knocked off a lot of people that way. So, yeah, there's definitely some other issues, and I think that's one of the limitations of even this study, looking at our clinic, that there are some big problems with them.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you, Dr. Lachlan.